The Tarncast, Tarncast. 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 This is the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, the Tarncast.
Hi, everybody. That was Adam Blau, and that means this must be the Tarncast. I'm your host. We've done over 50 episodes. If you don't know who the host is, you're not paying attention. This week's guest is Todd Robert Anderson. You may know from Fuzztrack City, the web show of Todd, his one-man show Useless, the Film Pigs podcast, the Film Pigs web show on Geek Nation, the Film Pigs DVD commentaries, wrote some books, one's about why you shouldn't act. He's done a lot of commercials, and he posts some really depressing things on Twitter. So Todd's here, and we're going to talk to him. Todd, hi. Thanks for coming to be on my show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I apologize about the depressing nature of some of my tweets. I honestly don't know why I do that, but sometimes I'm, when I got my Twitter account, because most of my friends are, they're funny and they do sardonic humor. I don't follow too many people who are, post inspirational quotes and whatnot, or just say, that they're out having food. Most of the people, I follow are funny. And, I try to make jokes, a lot of them, not great, but, then sometimes I'm just in a mood. And I don't know. It's like free therapy. But I have been accused of that before. A number of my LA friends are like, "Man, you post some really depressing tweets." I apologize. I sincerely apologize. What are you going to do? Sometimes you're sad, and if you have access to a social network, you want everyone else to be sad with you. Misery loves company, you guys. So follow me on Twitter and get sad. Thanks. Thanks for having me on the show. Very, very, very excited to be here. And by the way, it's such a great honor to be on this show because I just think you're amazing. This is you have what I think is the best podcast on the web. I love listening to you. You're amazing. The questions you ask are spot on. And you have a beautiful, beautiful voice.
Oh, stop. We don't have time for all your flattery. I've got all these questions to get through you. Let's get started. Well, obviously, I really enjoy podcasts. And I mean, I host one, but I like listening to them. And I think that's partly because growing up, I listened to a lot of talk radio. You know, back when it was Shock Jocks and Drive Time Entertainment, not just political shouting all the time. You were on another show. I don't really remember the name, but we heard a clip of you calling in to a Boston radio station and doing a little bit. Did you listen to a lot of that style of radio growing up? Was that an influence at all?
Well, when I was, that clip from, is from, WBCN. It was, a nighttime, the WBCN in Boston played rock and roll music and they had a lot of DJs who were, aggressively comic, I guess you'd say. And that I was dared. It was a, they had like kind of a fake phone sex show. And in between songs, they'd have people call in and make fun of them. And I was at a party and the people at the party dared me to call in and do phone sex on the air. And that's what that was. But I honestly wasn't a huge fan of those kind of DJs, because they were all pretty mean-spirited. It was about getting people on the phone and making fun of them. I influenced as far as, my own podcasts and stuff. I think what I like about podcasts is it's more, it's not, radio in the classic sense. It's sort of the wild, wild west and there's no FCC regulations and people can talk about what they want. And that's what I find interesting about podcasts is the edgy nature of it. You know, it's, It's hardcore, and people can be as absurdly funny as they want to. There's, you know, they talk about sex graphically, talk about political issues with complete abandon because there's no corporate overlords. Of course, there's not a lot of money in podcasting, so that's the downside of that. But artistically speaking, it's actually, I listen to podcasts because of that very thing. It's raw and you peek into people's lives that you wouldn't normally get to. And I didn't listen to a lot of talk radio as a kid. My dad did. My dad listened to, sports talk radio and, the news on the radio and stuff when we would be in the car driving to grandma's house or whatever. And I always thought it was really, really boring. The podcast is sort of a great juxtaposition against the stuff that I grew up hearing, but I was never that into it. So I wouldn't say that certainly the BCN guys, I'm not into that kind of humor. And there was nighttime, but it's sort of like the morning zoo stuff where it's like, wow, big personalities and sound effects and on BCN, WBCN in Boston in particular at that time. I don't know what it's like now because I don't live there. But those guys were pretty mean-spirited, but people thought they were hilarious. You know, Charles Lacuadera and Mark Parento. I do remember quoting Mark Parento quite a bit because he would say, lick me. And that made me laugh. Just someone saying, lick me on the radio. But now that's quaint because we have podcasts and you can say, hey, fucking lick my bunghole. And nobody's going to stop you. That's, you understand what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm sure you do. You're smart. Yeah.
Well, that was fascinating. Next question. You've sort of talked about this a little bit, but I don't think it can be talked about enough. Wasn't Magnum P.I. just great? I mean, it was terrible sometimes, too, and might have leaned too heavily on Genesis tracks, but at least they never did a musical episode. And when people talk about how TV today is so experimental with troubled heroes and blending genres and multi-season story arcs, I think, HBO didn't invent that shit. Give Magnum some props, am I right?
I totally, completely agree with you about the wonderfulness that was Magnum P.I. And it should get props for kind of breaking new ground as far as a troubled, main character is concerned. I mean, he's a freeloader. He is a private investigator, which is kind of a dicey profession, and he suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder. But that's the concept of the character, but really what I love, he's also got this great sense of humor, despite all those things. And he's always laughing, and he can be very serious and shoots people when he has to, but he laughs with his friend. Magnum was such a cool guy. And I miss that, actually, element of television, because in the 80s, hour-long, for one, they don't really make hour-long action shows anymore. They're shows about serial killers and procedural dramas and lawyers and stuff, but there's no A-team anymore. And Magnum P.I., to me, was the creme de la creme of the action thriller 80s shows, because the characters were so wonderful and endearing and the relationships were very funny. So there was this sense of humor that went through the whole thing, and Magnum was just such a likable guy. And for the ladies, some of the fellas, he's a very gorgeous guy, but for me, he was just sort of, I wanted to be like him and hang out with him and be that cool and able to be a hero and at the same time laugh at my own nonsense. And I don't know, he was just such a charming dude, and I still love Tom Selleck and watch Tom Selleck stuff, although his show Blue Bloods, I guess and then he has that series of movies where he's a retired alcoholic cop or something like that, Jesse Stone, and I miss that Magnum Tom Selleck, and he was that Tom Selleck in movies like Three Men and a Baby and stuff like that. But that's kind of television performance and film performance really doesn't exist anymore. Everybody's so earnest and serious, and nobody's got a sense of humor about themselves. And in shows, you know, you watch him on Blue Bloods, and he's world weary and all that. And I'm not saying he's bad, but you know, he's very good. He's a good actor. That's the truth about Tom Selleck. He's a very good actor. But I miss the fun Tom Selleck of the 80s, you know, not just Magnum, but, you know, you had High Road to China and even Runaway, you know, those silly movies where he was charming and funny. And even though he was a tough guy, he wasn't. He had a buoyancy to him. And I think just in general, there's so much television that has no buoyancy to it. It's very depressive and overly earnest, and I just miss that kind of funness. And yeah, like any long-running show, there were episodes that were dumb and stuff that didn't fly, and of course you look at it now and the fashions are weird and his shorts look strange. But on its worst day, I enjoyed the hell out of watching Magnum. It was a fun place to go. I mean, and I think that's another thing. When you have a favorite show or a favorite genre of film or whatever, you go, and on its worst day, you're still having fun with it. There isn't that much of that anymore for me. The stuff has to rise above its trappings these days for me to really enjoy it. And again, I think it's because, you know, you save so much if you have an hour-long show that has a good sense of humor about itself and isn't pretentious, because there was nothing pretentious about Magnum at all. It was just entertainment. I don't know what else to say except Magnum P.I., one of my absolute favorite shows of all time, if not my favorite show of all time. I mean, Cheers is right up there, and you know, more recently, you know, Deadwood, and I really like the show Death Valley, which only lasted for a season on MTV, which is too bad because that was a really funny show. But the long and short of it is, you know, and if they're, how would you pitch Magnum? Now, I have this conversation with my friend Andy Kamenetsky all the time. We talk about it. It's like, how would you pitch Magnum? So it's a show about a guy who's got post-traumatic stress disorder from being in Vietnam, and he hangs out with his Vietnam buddies, and he is a complete mooch, and he lives in a rich novelist's mansion and gets into it with the butler all the time, and he's solving cases because he's a private investigator. So what do you guys think? They'd throw you out of the office if you pitched that. But, you know, the 80s was a different time. There was a lot more, yes-anding. I don't know, a lot more support of stranger concepts. And, man, I miss that. I miss that.
Wow, that was really well put. I really agree with that. I'm sorry, this is a little awkward. I just remembered I have some laundry in the dryer I have to go get. So, Todd, for the next question, what is your least favorite chore around the house? Feel free to go on about why you hate it at length. I'll be back in just a second. Thanks. Be right back.
Oh. Okay. All right. Least favorite chore. I mean, honestly, I am probably going to say laundry. I'm not a fan of doing laundry, and it's one of those things, you know, and I got a wife and kids, so the hamper gets full and it's overflowing and you can't close it, and then you have to do laundry. It's something you have to do, otherwise you have dirty clothes all over the floor and you start looking like you're some kind of college student again. It's loud. We have a small house, so, you know, you put the wash in or the dryer on, and you can't really watch TV in the living room because the laundry room's right off the living room. And we have these recessed doors, and the recessed door to the laundry room is broken, so you can't even close it to muffle the sound. So you got to turn the TV way up. So you can't do laundry at night because you can't have the TV too loud because it'll wake the kid up. I don't enjoy folding. I suck at folding. I've never been good at folding laundry, and my wife doesn't even allow me to fold her laundry because she just has to redo it again. So I really only fold my laundry and my kids' laundry sometimes, but then she gets mad at me because I do such a bad job of folding laundry, and it doesn't fit in the drawers because I don't do it right. And I mean, she folds laundry like, you know, they do at the department stores where it's perfect and fancy and everything's, but I can't, I hate folding laundry. I hate it. And so that's definitely my least favorite chore. I mean, I don't mind taking out the trash. We don't have a dishwasher. I'm not a huge fan of doing dishes either. I don't like dishes. I don't like cleaning. I mean, I don't like doing the toilet. I don't like chores, but I do them because, you know, I can't afford a maid.
Oh my God. Yeah, you're right. That's the worst. I hate that. Okay, well, anyway, moving on. Question number four. Recently you've been trying to help promote some musicians that you're a fan of, which I think is great. And that's actually something I've harped on a lot. I think one of the great things about the internet is that it's very easy to find artists who speak to you personally that maybe don't get mass media attention. They don't have big international conglomerates behind them, but there's, you know, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, Lulu, those are the obvious ones, but there's also Tiny Showcase for artists. There are sites like Mubi and Ubuweb and Flipside that have independent movies, foreign films, weird little obscure things that go back to the 20s and 30s. Like, there is so much available online. And I think it's a shame that people just go to YouTube or Netflix. And I love those sites too, but there's so much more. So, Todd, I wanted to see, is there something you wanted to call attention to? Movie, vlog, a writer? You know, somebody who you think deserves some attention. You've covered musicians, so I don't want to hear musicians. And ideally, if it's a movie, maybe just for a change, one you're not in. You know, I understand you have to promote yourself, but maybe throw a little light on something you admire. What do you got for us?
Wow. Okay, a movie that I'm not in that I admire. I mean, really, the best movies I've ever seen are the ones that I am involved in. But I hear what you're saying. Actually, I was at a film festival towards the end of 2012. I was at a film festival up in the Bay Area, and there was this group of filmmakers, young kids, pretty much just out of college, but they made this short film. I went to, you know, a screening of a bunch of shorts, and theirs really stood out to me. It was sort of this weird horror comedy. It was in black and white, and it was called Mud. And it was about, I mean, and this is the thing, you know, a lot of times I watch short films that are super uber arty. I'm not like necessarily a fan of uber arty weird stuff, because a lot of times it feels like it's weird for the sake of being weird. I really feel that way a lot of, I mean, I know David Lynch is a weird dude, but his movies always feel like there's something not genuine about them. It feels like, hey, here's this absurd world. I'm not really into that stuff. But this was a weird movie, and I was totally drawn into it. You know, I don't know, it was probably like 15, 20 minutes or something like that, about this girl who came out of the mud, and this couple takes her in, but this couple is having a hard time with their relationship, and they take this girl in from the mud, and it's kind of, there's a feeling of dread. Is she going to kill them? You know, and then I don't want to give too much away, but the relationships twist around, and it's the opposite of what you think it is. Very weird, and creepy, and has this sexual vibe to it. And that movie, and it's called Mud, and I'm sure you can look it up online. They have a Facebook page. it's a cool little movie. So I'd recommend that. It's really hard to find movies, indie movies, that are great. And obviously a lot of the big film festivals these days are driven by the studios and their stars. Sundance is just a star fucking festival. And these quote unquote independent films that have major financial backers. There's so little middle class in movie making now. It's a little different than music, I think. And, the only way to get to it is online online. You look at your Netflix feed and there's plenty of stuff in there, but you got to wade through some serious crap to find gems. I'm a horror junkie, so I wind up seeing a lot of what they call direct to video movies, which is the main market for independently produced horror films. For every 20 I see, there's one that I think is okay. And very few that I think are great. Over the last few years, I would say, one of the ones that I really liked was this movie called, it's a horror movie called Splinter. So I'd recommend that. It's about this kind of alien substance that if you get a splinter of it and it takes you over, it's not good. But that's a really good movie. Much of it takes place in a convenience store, gas station and convenience store, where they're sort of trapped in there by this creature. So I really liked, I would highly recommend seeing Splinter. And also horror comedies, they don't make many of those anymore because they never make money. I mean, the last one the studio tried to do was, I want to say Slither, which I loved, but that movie bombed and they said, this movie kills the horror comedy genre. But that's not true. You gotta look. I mean, a lot of people know about this movie, at least horror people do. It's called Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Great take on great way to turn the genre tropes on their ear. The horror people say that Cabin in the Woods was the best movie of 2012, and I definitely loved that movie. And Tucker and Dale versus Evil is a great companion piece with it because it's the same sort of thing. It takes horror tropes and it turns them on their ear. So what starts to seem like, oh, I've seen this before, it turns out, oh no, I've not seen this before. It's very, 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 very funny. I highly recommend that movie as well. So those are a couple of suggestions off the top of my head. I'm sure if I sat down, and then there's a lot of stuff that comes from overseas. I mean, over the last few years, there's been movies like the British movie. There's a British movie called Creep, which is with that Run Lola Run chick, and that's a really good movie. It was originally called The Tube because it all takes place in the London subway. And then a lot of fun stuff comes out of New Zealand. Good horror comedy, example of horror comedy that came out of New Zealand was Black Sheep. And it's about sheep that turn into zombies, zombie sheep. It's hilarious. I highly recommend that one. So, I mean, for me, it's, so much of what I wind up getting is overseas, but again it's so hard to wade through all the shit on Netflix because it might seem interesting and fun because the art they have, the poster art they have, is like, oh, that's cool, and it's got zombies, and you watch it and it's abysmal because somebody who had $5,000 and a camera thought that, hey, I can make a movie because I've seen a bunch of movies, and they can't, I mean, there are the Netflix queue. My Netflix queue is often filled with movies where the filmmakers don't even understand the 180 degree rule. So to wade through all that to find these gems is very, very difficult. And it's sort of wonderful that the internet has opened up and there's so much independent stuff that you can find. But at the same time, it has made it so easy for people to make things and get it out there when maybe they shouldn't. I mean, I think a lot of people do these things for the sake of doing them versus actually having a story they want to tell or a love of whatever genre they're working in. So, you know, it's, I mean, and music, I guess, is the same way. Although I have an easier time discovering new musicians than I do great new movies. Yeah, that's all I got on that. But again, go find the short film Mud. Tell me what you think.
Okay, well, listeners, go check that out. Question number 5 here is socks. What do you think about them? Some people like to have a lot of colorful socks because it's fun, although I don't really understand that because who sees your socks? Other people just want plain white or plain black because then you don't have to worry about matching them. Some people just hate socks and wear flip-flops all the time and ugh. So what do you think about socks?
I have to agree with you on the issue of not wearing socks, open-toed shoes. You know, unless you have amazing feet, I'm not a foot person anyway. But I think socks are important as far as covering up your nasty, stinky, smelly feet. And my feet are they're not good looking feet. Gross feet. So the socks are an important part of my wardrobe. However, I take no joy in picking out socks. I am definitely a white or black tube sock kind of person. And then, of course, I have various colored socks, dress socks. But when I say various colors, I mean they're browns and grays and blacks that you wear with dress shoes. And that's it. I mean, I'm very practical about socks. But I'm sort of that way with clothing in general. I'm not a fashion person. My wife basically picks out my clothes at the store and gives them to me, and then I put them on thoughtlessly, which is a strange thing because, you know, I am an actor, and usually actors are very concerned about their appearance, but I'm not. So, yeah, Now, on one hand, I think socks are very important. On the other hand, who gives a shit what they look like? Just wear them. Do not walk around barefoot, you know, unless you're at the beach. And I don't go to the beach very much, so that doesn't bother me, really. So, yeah, wear your socks. Your feet stink, people.
Okay. I guess I probably should have put some more thought into that question. No, it's fine. Let's see. Next. Oh, well, okay. You've mentioned more than a few times that you just hated the movie Drive because the trailer made you think it was an action movie and it's actually more of a psychological neo-noir. Todd, what's something else that you're fundamentally wrong about?
I was talking to a couple of guys just last night about the Paul Greengrass Bourne sequels, the Bourne Supremacy and the Bourne Ultimatum, two films that I just don't understand the appeal of. I can't make sense out of them visually. The shaky camera is too much for me. And maybe that's because I'm old or whatever. I don't know. But I don't know. These things are all – they're subjective opinions. And it's very interesting and very – I don't know. I don't know. My subjective opinion is very different from most people's subjective opinion. And I have very particular tastes. But really – even for myself, they're sort of enigmatic. I don't know why the movie Drive was mismarketed, and maybe that was my reaction to it. You know, in the end, I just wasn't that compelled by the movie. And these guys I was talking to last night were offended that I did not like the Paul Greengrass Bourne movies because they think they're the the bee's knees. And then everybody likes the new James Bond movies with Daniel Craig. While I think they have their moments, I just – and, you know, we're getting back to that thing we were talking about in Magnum. Everything is so earnest and humorless. I mean, James Bond, the James Bonds I grew up on were good-humored – fun movies, you know, and like now they don't have gadgets or anything fun in them. It's just like a brutish spy going around and getting in fights. And all he's got is a phone and a gun, and, you know, that's fine. But aren't all the other action spy movies the same way? Can't we have at least one franchise that's silly and fun? I mean, even superhero movies take themselves too seriously. I think that's why The Avengers was even more successful than they thought it was going to be, is because it's the first superhero movie that's come along in a long time where it has a genuine sense of humor. It's funny. It's a funny movie. And most of them really take themselves incredibly seriously. I mean, even when they have their jokes, the movie itself doesn't have an overarching or arching, or, you know what I mean, sense of humor running through it. Whereas The Avengers really did. And beyond that, you know, I don't think anyone is a bad person for liking the movie Drive or the Bourne sequels. If you love those movies, God bless you. The general reaction to those things, I wonder a lot of times when I see movies that I don't understand, is this an Emperor's New Clothes thing? In those Bourne sequels, and I liked the first Bourne movie a lot, but in those Bourne sequels, I cannot see what's going on. So if you can tell what's going on, and I remember my mother-in-law loves, and father, or stepfather-in-law, what, I don't know what you call that. But they loved those movies. And when I asked them, can you tell me in this sequence exactly how Matt Damon beats up all the bad guys and gets out of there? Can you explain that to me? And they couldn't. They couldn't. Have movies – I get the idea of suggestion, you know, but maybe that's going a little too far where you can't actually tell what's happening in an action sequence. Drive, I don't know. Drive was just look like a Michael Mann movie. I don't know about this homage stuff. There's too much homage stuff that happens in these movies that everyone thinks are brilliant. I'm like, but I already saw that. I already saw Drive. In fact, Drive is very similar to the movie Thief with James Caan, you know, and I sort of was like, I feel like I've seen this already. I found the performances in Thief more compelling than I did Drive. But at the, you know, I'm not trying. If you love the movie Drive, that's awesome. I'm happy for you. I'm glad. I mean, I don't think it was an exercise in incompetence. It just didn't blow me away. And the same thing with the Bourne sequels. If you like them, that's great. But, you know, I guess with subjective opinions, you have to ask yourself, do I like this movie because everybody else did and it's a great water cooler conversation and we're bonding over this? Or did you like the movie because you really liked the movie? I guess that's all I'm saying. And again, let's not get all bent out of shape if my subjective opinion about something is different than yours. Everybody's become so precious about their subjective opinions about pop culture when it fucking doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Your subjective opinion about a movie is all it is. You know, most people think, you know, the movie Bullet to the Head with Sylvester Stallone is a retarded exercise in irresponsible violence. And while that's a perfectly valid argument, I was amused as hell by that picture. And obviously most people weren't, because it bombed. But I guess, you know, all I'm saying is let's not get bent out of shape. So I drive didn't speak to me. It spoke to you. That's great. If you could tell what was happening in those Bourne sequels, that's great. I'm happy for you. I couldn't. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not saying that to go against the tide, because there's a lot of, like I mentioned, the Avengers. Everybody loved that movie. And I had a good time with that movie. Greatest movie of all time? No, certainly not. But it's a lot of fun. So I guess, you know, that's all I'm saying is, yeah, it's just a subjective opinion. I don't think a subjective opinion can be fundamentally, wrong. It is certainly funny to say someone's subjective opinion is fundamentally wrong, but maybe you should be careful, because, you know, maybe you really hurt my feelings. And as soon as a podcast is over, I'm going to cry.
Wow. That was really powerfully honest. And I think we've all learned a little something about how wrong you can be sometimes. That was great. Okay. Next question. Oh, well, all right. The thing is, it doesn't make any sense to believe that Higgins was Robin Masters the whole time, really. I mean, especially in early seasons, there are other people being sent in, not just Magnum, but other security experts and all kinds of people who come in and screw with Higgins and make them miserable. And why would he do that if he was actually the one in charge? What would his motivation be? Doesn't make sense, right?
Okay, back to Magnum. Yeah, the ongoing debate is Higgins Robin Masters or not. And Magnum himself thought he might be. And then Higgins, as I recall, when Magnum suggested that, laughed himself absolutely silly. I honestly don't know. I don't know. It's a fun thing to think about. What is his motivation? I don't know. Can't he just be an eccentric rich person who's bored out of his mind and just enjoys playing this part? I don't know. I don't know. Why are you talking me about this? Now I feel I don't land on anyone. Sometimes, some days I'm like, no, of course he's not Robin Masters. And others say, well, why not? Why wouldn't he be? I mean, maybe he's doing research for a novel. Maybe he's got a series of novels based on Magnum, you know, and he's just changed the name and it's just a research thing. I'm the butler dealing with the shiftless layabout, who's a private investigator who I let stay in my guest house. Why is that so hard to believe? Why wouldn't that be that's a good enough motivation for me. Everybody's always bent about characters having a motivation, you know. They don't make horror movies anymore where they don't explain why the psycho killer is the psycho. He had a bad childhood or something. You know, well, what happened to the good old fashioned monster or the good old-fashioned arbitrary choice? People get too bent on these backstories. But in any event, as far as Higgins Robin Masters, I don't know. It's just a fun thing to think about. Well, I mean, why? Now I'm upset.
Well, thanks for helping sort that out. Question 8. Oh, this one was sent in by a listener, actually. You've done a lot of media in a lot of formats. And this listener wanted to know, how do you get over hearing how crappy your own voice sounds when it doesn't have all the resonance you normally get from hearing it inside your own skull?
That is a good question. I for one, and I do freely admit that I don't have a very resonant voice. I sound, you know, like a Tom Hanks, which is fine and dandy. I think I've been doing this stuff for so long, acting and talking into microphones and all that I just honestly I've just gotten used to it and accepted my voice for what it is. I don't have an awesome radio DJ voice. That's all there is to it. I'm just a regular sounding guy, and you know, if you don't do it that often, it sounds weird to you. But once you do it enough, you get used to the sound of your own voice. It's not that you fall in love with it or anything. You're just like, well, that's the way I sound. And, I'm sorry if people find it agitating or not. But I think you can, You just got to forgive yourself. You're imperfect. It is the way it is. And if you want to play in the showbiz field, you have to, you know, your weaknesses can become your strengths. And that which sounds weird to you played back, it's interesting because, you know, you cannot fathom how the world sees you or hears you. And the way the world processes you is different the way you process yourself. So and I think that when you hear yourself back or see yourself on screen or whatever, it can be very jarring because you're essentially seeing yourself more on the level that the world might see you. And that's a weird thing. But once you do it long enough, you just get used to it. You're just like, I'm going to focus on the work and trying to figure that out. And how I sound or look or whatever doesn't necessarily bother me. I mean, sometimes you have moments where you're like, oh, God, oh, what? Wow. You know, but the more you do it, the just more used to your own damn self you get. That's all I'm saying.
Huh. You know, I kind of thought you would have a better answer there. Oh, well. No, we'll just keep going. Okay. Do you think the world is really getting worse kind of rapidly? Or is it just that we were taught bullshit history when we were kids and, you know, teachers made it seem like civilization has been this fairly steady march of progress and things are always getting better. And now that we're older, we look around and we see how god-awful a lot of things still are and think, this is bad.
Yeah, that's a... I mean, it's a simple answer right there. I mean, clearly the world is, you know, constantly getting worse. It's just a downward spiral. I don't know how else to – yeah. I mean, clearly. Horrible. Horrible place. Awful.
Okay. My producer is saying we're running out of time here, so this is an easy question. Number 10, what's your favorite board game?
My favorite board game – that's – I'm not actually really into board games, but now that I have a kid, I play them more. And, you know, I'm trying to get him away from the Candylands and the Chutes and Ladders because I find those games interminable. So boring. But he's got this Lego Harry Potter game, and you move pieces around and try to get all these bits, you know, a magic, I don't know, crystal and a wand and all these different things that you have to get, and the pieces sort of move around. So there's like a chess-like strategy where you think ahead, and playing that with him, where, you know, the first time we played, he was frustrated, didn't get it, but now he's starting to understand that you got to strategize. And so currently I think that's my favorite game, because watching my 7-year-old boy figure out strategies, working stuff out like that. That's exciting. So I would go with the Lego Harry Potter game currently.
Okay, well, that was great. We're down to the last question for the night, and I'm pretty excited about this one. Todd, as you may know, I'm a big fan of a game you play on Film Pigs called Pitch Me. And for some reason, you have never gotten to play that game, which is some sort of crazy oversight. So I would like you to give me a title and synopsis for a monster movie directed by Paul Verhoeven, starring Tom Selleck, James Urbaniak, and you, Todd Robert Anderson. For this solitaire version of the game, you can consider yourself a winner if I decide to offer you more than $1 million to write this screenplay. So, pitch me.
The movie, the monster movie, directed by Verhoeven, starring Tom Selleck, James Urbaniak, and me, is called Three Men and a Giant Slimy Lizard. Three Men and a Giant Slimy Lizard, and it's about a pet lizard that a small child had and was flushed down the toilet when the child got sick of it and they didn't want to take care of it anymore, and it got into the sewers and there was toxic waste dumped into the sewers. The lizard grew. But what really gives it an edge is the lizard is in the sewer underneath a strip club, a very seedy strip club where many of the strippers are also prostitutes. And the lizard starts to, when it comes up out of the sewer, it comes up into a grate in an alleyway behind the seedy strip club and starts to develop a taste for strippers and prostitutes. And Tom Selleck is, of course, the strip club owner and pimp. James Urbaniak and I are vice squad officers, hell-bent on bringing down Tom Selleck and his ring of seedy prostitutes and sex trafficking. We're both undercover. We're partners who are undercover. So we spend a lot of time in the strip club. And you know, when you're undercover, sometimes you have to go really deep. So there's a lot of very graphic sex scenes with me and James Urbaniak having relations with these stripper hookers. We inadvertently discover that there's a giant monster, and the monster is getting bigger and bigger and needs more and more strippers, and finally bursts into the strip club. And then we have to join forces with this pimp we were trying to take down to destroy the lizard. So it's the pimp in Tom Selleck and the undercover cops and me and James Urbaniak who have to fight the lizard. And in doing so, by the end, realize that, you know, maybe stripper prostitutes isn't such a bad thing. And we quit being cops and become the assistants to Tom Selleck's strip club owner pimp. And, you know, once we bring the lizard down. So, yeah, that's my movie. Three men and a giant slimy lizard.
Wow. That was something. Maybe I should have mentioned this before, but I did want to see where you would go with the concept. So the studio authorized me to offer you $100,000 per foot of your monster's height. So if you went with a leprechaun, you would get $250,000. Or if it was King Kong, $5 million. The moral there is go big or go home. And actually, it's time to go home regardless. Thanks for joining me and my guest, Todd Robert Anderson. See you next time on the Toncast.